So, like in my family, it's not even an issue that I would take care of my mother.
When you're dealing with people who are in the grip of Alzheimer's, that changes the whole picture.
I'm her caregiver because we tried to bring in a couple of people, but it just didn't work out. So I'm providing all the services that she needs right now.
I love my grandmother, and I love my mother, and the experience of taking care of other people, it really changes you. You have to meet the challenges as they come, and so it's a juggling act, really. It's a lot of work-life balance issues. But it's definitely worthwhile.
Although we may assume the elderly are a homogeneous group, it only takes a walk down any New York City block to realize how far that is from the truth. There are nearly 1.5 million older adults in New York. The graying of our city will push that number closer to 1.8 million in the next 15 years. By 2030, there will be more older New Yorkers than elementary school children for the first time ever, and many will require at least some care from family members. Thousands of family caregivers find themselves caught between their ethnic ties, cultural expectations, and modern struggles with work, the high cost of city living, their own needs, and the needs of those they care for. Finding and accessing the resources that could help them is frustrating, time-consuming, and often impossible. For many, caregiving becomes a tap dance within a fragmented system that's often pieced together month by month or even week by week.
I think there's a stigma about talking about the reality of it. It's a very emotional journey. It's not always a pleasant journey. And I think the people that do it, especially of my generation, because I'm 53, I'll be 54, right? So now it's a big issue of my generation, because we all have parents that are anywhere from 80 to 90. You kind of do it, and if you complain, you kind of feel like a bad daughter, or, you know, a bad son, or, you know, and it's also, we come from that post-war or war generation, people who grew up during the Second World War. My mother took care of my grandmother took care of my great-grandmother, you know, my great-grandmother took care of her mother, you know. It's the norm.
Soli Davis feels the strong pull of tradition. She's half Japanese and half African-American. She lives on the Upper West Side with her 77-year-old mother.
She has Parkinson's, spinal stenosis, vascular dementia, diabetes, high cholesterol, and high blood pressure.
Soli's been caring for her mom full-time for the last 5 years, and before that, helped take care of her father and her grandparents. Like many other caregivers, she gave up her own apartment, her business, and much of her independence in the process.
It was my fourth business I closed. I've had businesses. Businesses come and go. Your mother, you only get once. We're incredibly close. We have a great relationship, and we always have. And so even if her needs are a lot, she's not particularly clingy. So she wants me to have as much independence as I can. And she's still one of the wisest, most graceful, unconditionally loving people I've ever met.
She credits her Japanese heritage with giving her a different outlook on caregiving than many of her peers seem to have.
In Japan, to be of service is a privilege and an honor. It's not to be subservient or servant. And I think that's a big difference culturally. In America. So I don't know that the job of a caretaker is really respected here. You know, in America, it's very different because you come from another culture, and while that may be your culture, that's not necessarily your friends or even all of your families. So it's hard to maintain that here. But, like, if I go back to Japan, it's like, you know, yeah, I'm a good daughter, but it's completely expected that I be a good daughter. and a good granddaughter and a good whatever.
But like other caregivers I spoke with, she's frustrated with the processes. Juggling appointments, managing medications, cutting through red tape, and waging constant battles to get appropriate home and community support services.
I mean, I am someone who's very kind of progressive and proactive and does navigate systems well. But if I'm not like that, then what happens to my mom? And what happens to the seniors who don't have a daughter like me or a son like me? Who aren't willing to sacrifice or can't afford to because they have kids and a wife and whatever. But there's no umbrella for you to go and get all that information.
New York is in many ways the nation intensified, says Carol Levine, who directs the United Hospital Fund's Family and Healthcare Project. They focus on developing partnerships between healthcare professionals and family caregivers.
Everything that's happening across the country is happening here, but in a more compressed environment and with more more moving pieces and more different people, groups, languages, heritages. And so everything seems to be heightened here, but I think in general the same situations apply nationally and even internationally.
Advances in medical care make it possible for an aging population to live longer and to live at home, which in most cases is the choice. People are living with chronic illnesses that require more or less constant care, and women are still the primary caregivers. But there are also more women in the workforce than ever before. Along with smaller families and more mobility,
you could call it a perfect storm, or you could call it, well, this is an opportunity for everyone to step up and do the right thing. It's kind of both.
Caregiving is often something that just kind of happens. Jasmine Perlman is not a stereotypical middle-aged caregiver. She was only 21 when her mother was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Over the past 11 years, she has helped her mom through bypass surgery, angioplasty, and amputation.
A lot of people didn't think that that I should be bothered with her illness. A lot of people were like, you know, you should, you know, just tend to your own life and just go to school and work and focus on yourself. And so me being so young made people upset, actually. But I feel that the family unit comes first. And so life doesn't just back up because we're young and we have other things to do. You have to meet the challenges as they come.
Nevertheless, her strong belief that family comes first prompted her to move her widowed grandmother up from Florida to live with her 3 years ago. It was harder than she expected.
She was highly, highly uncooperative. My grandmother is extremely difficult. She did not want to tell me the status of her health. She did not want to tell me the status of anything. She didn't want me to know that the sky was blue. It's very difficult trying to take care of someone and they won't cooperate with you.
Levine says this is not uncommon.
The issues that caregivers face are universal. They present themselves in very specific ways, depending on the family structure, depending on the relationships, depending on the community, depending on the family or the caregiver's resources. So it's as though you have the same problems of someone needing care, the system not being responsive, but then how does that play out in real life? And it's very different, very, very different.
Brooklyn resident Jerome Brown, 57, had to quit his full-time job to care for his wife, Linda. She had quadruple heart bypass surgery several years ago and is battling severe diabetes.
She went from being able to walk upright to then she started developing foot problems. Then she was using a cane. Then she went from using a cane to a walker. Then she went from using the walker to the walker with wheels that she could sit in. And then she, because of the diabetes, she injured her foot and didn't realize it. And this is how serious diabetes is. When she injured her foot, she had 4 fractures in her foot and didn't realize it. Yeah, because she lost almost all feelings in her foot. And when we took her to the doctor, they just couldn't believe that she was trying to walk around like that. So that's where we're at now. My baby, I'm pushing around wherever we go. She's in a wheelchair now. And that's the challenge also, because I want to take her out more, but I can't always take her to places I need to go at because they just don't have accommodation for people in wheelchairs.
The caregivers we spoke with say it's been tremendously challenging to find out about appropriate and affordable services. Dr. Robin Fenley is Deputy Assistant Commissioner in the Bureau of Long-Term Care at the New York City Department for the Aging, or DFDA.
Caregiving wasn't something that people spoke about quite so openly as they now are. But even so, it is about knowing where in your community can I go to get what it is that I need. And what is it that I do need? All I know is I need help. I'm getting overwhelmed. This is just too much. What we try to do is if there is a family member, we like to include this family system, the caregiver and the care receiver, into the caregiver programs because the caregiver programs can have support groups that will help the caregiver as they're trying to navigate the various, you know, care systems that are out there. It can also provide training, informational sessions, educational sessions on aspects of care that they might not be aware of. We're able to, again, depending on the need of the individuals, you know, set up educational programs that could help them with how do you turn in position? How do you change the bandage? You know, but also it could be because sometimes the care needs could be extensive, and we're talking long term, that there will be help provided. You know, we'll bring in elder law attorneys to help the caregiver understand what they're facing financially and how to help the care receiver be equipped financially to be able to get the services that they need for as long as they need.
Websites and hotlines can be challenging to navigate.
You know, the 311 program is a great program. They really do try to help you. You know, find the Department of Aging, find this, find that. Their websites aren't particularly easy to work with. If a senior is alone, there is no way for them to navigate. What's a 90-year-old woman going to do on a website that I don't want to navigate?
And too often, caregivers find themselves in situations they're just not equipped to handle, like when their loved one gets discharged from the hospital with medical needs. It happened to Jerome Brown.
Yeah, that was really scary. Wow. I just did a lot of research because of what Linda and I have both been through. I've just learned to go on the web, and if the doctors tell me about certain types of medication, I look it up. I ask. We have a really great pharmacy that we go to. I ask him a lot of information. He shares with me. He tells me certain things. He tells me what type of medicine to look out for, when she should take it. So, you know, it's a lot of information out there. You just got to know how to go about getting it.
Fenley says this is where the Department for the Aging can step in to help.
There are a team of experienced social workers who will take the call, hear what the concerns are, help figure out what service is really needed, and then be able to funnel the person to the services in their area. They would work with them to figure out a plan that would work, A, and then B, how to afford it.
Often local providers will even know of ancillary services that her department is not aware of. But there's a bit of a catch-22.
It always goes back to the people's voice. People need to be able to not only not be shy about finding out what services are in their neighborhood. But if those services are not there, then by all means, go to your local council member, go to your local legislators, and let them know. And don't hesitate to keep going back. It's the advocacy that really puts money in the coffers to be able to provide the services, A, and also defines the services and how the services are to be delivered and what are the parameters of the services. I cannot stress enough how important it is for people to be able to advocate on their own behalf. And if you're shy about advocating on your own behalf, then find your organizations in your area. There are advocacy agencies around who are more than happy. This is what they do, to go and say to whatever city agency or whatever legislator, this is what we need. That's how change happens.
As Soli Davis points out,
who has time? I don't have time. I was up at 5:30 this morning. We're halfway through my day. So I'm looking for the most expedient way to solve a problem. I'm not running for office. I'm not looking to create infrastructure that should already exist.
I don't think that the people in the community have an awareness of any resources that may be available, a few resources that may be available. What I do is with regards to the members of my congregation, I share with them such information as I may have regarding available resources. I also suggest to them that if they have a parent that is in a hospital in a condition that is going to require extensive care upon their discharge from the hospital, I advise them to engage the social worker at the hospital and also their physician. And a lot of times that proves to be helpful.
Reverend Robert Foley is pastor of the Cosmopolitan Church of the Lord Jesus in the Fordham Manor section of the Bronx. The 70-year-old minister helps care for his mother, now 93. After several years in an assisted living facility, she developed Alzheimer's and is now in a nearby nursing home. Many in his congregation are just beginning to deal with similar caregiving issues.
That problem is becoming more widespread throughout all of these communities, the white community, the black community, the Latino community, and others. This has not always been the case. And when I look back over my life, I can remember a time when the very word Alzheimer's was not even a part of our vocabulary. In the black community, I would say that Alzheimer's, until about 15 years ago, was not generally known. And it was not known basically because most black people didn't live long enough to get that. Most black people, both men and women, passed away in their, most of the men in their late 50s, early 60s, and most of the women in their mid-60s.
For many in his community and elsewhere, accessing services often comes down to one thing.
For persons who have a wealth, and I don't mean wealthy like Bloomberg or Donald Trump, but persons who have a wealth of financial resources don't have the problem that most people in the community have. People who have resources, who have the ability to pay, they can, at the snap of a finger almost, locate the resources that they need to provide for their loved ones. Most people don't have those resources. And as a matter of fact, if it were not for Medicaid, at least here in New York, those people would be, as they say, in deep water without a life jacket and without a boat.
New York City's cultural, ethnic, and economic diversity requires a broad range of services for both older adults and their family caregivers. Fenley says that's a high priority at the Department for the Aging.
What we actually have done is that certainly with our contractors, our community partners, those that are contracted to provide these services, they see this, they hear this, they experience it. And so they themselves, not only from a department for the aging encouraging them, but they themselves recognize the importance of hiring staff that are from the predominant community that they would serve. There's no way that we would be able to hire enough people that speak all those 140, 160, 190 languages or dialects. In all of our contracts, cultural competency, cultural trainings on cultural competency are part of what all of our providers are given by the department. You know, every service is as good as the person providing the service. And so if the service provider, the staff of this particular organization, could be as open to the diversity that's out there linguistically and culturally, I mean, that just improves the quality of the service that's delivered.
Pastor Foley would like to see information like this spread to members of his community.
To me, education, notification can go far in helping people to have a greater awareness of the issues that the elderly will more than likely be confronted with at some point in their lives before they exit planet Earth. Many don't have a realistic view of how that plays out. The city perhaps ought to be providing, you know, in these centers, there ought to be more workshops or more conferences where the seniors and members of their families can receive, you know, qualitative information and so forth.
He says the city should be doing more outreach to low-income and minority neighborhoods.
If, in fact, one could develop a means of getting this communication, of sending into these churches people who are articulate and who are capable of explaining and conveying helpful information to make people aware. I think that's one resource that that the city could tap into to really make people more greatly aware of what, for example, the city has to offer. There has been no one to call me or to offer to come into my church to explain anything having to do with geriatric issues. No one. I don't know of any colleagues who have been contacted by any city agency or any state agency offering to send resource people or a resource person to come to address the congregation regarding geriatric issues, particularly those that have to do with failing health and end of life conditions and experiences. None, no one.
Carol Levine of the United Hospital Fund says that once a caregiver does find out about available services, the next challenge becomes coordinating that care.
An urban area has some advantages in that there are multiple options, but then it can be very confusing, and it's very harder than I think that in small-town America or even middle-town America to get things coordinated, to make things fit together. There's potentially more available here, but it's harder.
And that's when you have the patience to wade through multiple websites or sit on the phone for hours. It can become practically a full-time job for a caregiver to find out about support and community options.
It is a patchwork. And, you know, if you're very resourceful and persistent, you can put together, you know, a reasonably good set of services that are appropriate for the person. But it takes a lot of time and you have to follow up.
Jasmine Perlman sifted through mounds of research to find services for her mother and grandmother. And then she took it another step.
The best thing to do is do your research, and you can't just sit on your computer and think that you'll just find what you need. You have to look for different organizations that provide the kind of help that you need and go and speak to them in person. Get to know people who are in the field of caregiving. And the other thing is you have to have a support system. You have to know other caregivers. You have to have other people in your life that understand what you're going through. And so with a support system and with knowing where to find the help that you need, those two things are really going to be the foundation of you being a successful family caregiver.
Caregiver burnout is real, and it's not going away anytime soon. While we know that support is critical when the stress and demands become overwhelming, caregivers ask why it's so hard to find information. More programs, more resources, more outreach, especially in lower-income and minority communities. It all takes money, something that's missing in the city's 2016 budget. More funds are allocated to home-delivered meals, but advocates say little has been set aside to help with other needs. Additional funding for case management and other programs is slated for the 2017 fiscal year, according to the mayor's office. Until then, family caregivers say they're just trying to make it one day at a time. For Health Styles, I'm Liz Siegert.